tide's running, so the whole thing becomes a very hypothetical scenario. Yet, nonetheless, it's an exercise that we have to go through, and we pick values here and say, okay, we set this value for this, that value for that, best we can, come out with an answer.
Dave, did you have additional comments before we get into the panel discussion? Did you have some general overall comments you wanted to address?
No, I didn't plan to do that. I could ramble for hours. And I think it would be better for everybody just to see the panel and respond to questions.
Please go ahead, Representative Lincoln.
I'm sorry, this might not be the great time to jump in here, but I've been trying to get you on the line here, and it's really difficult. I'm trying to be on teleconference and get into the conversation, but I wanted to not necessarily go back, but maybe this is a time when we talk about the assumptions. I would hope that the department is looking at the difference between bush Alaska and urban Alaska on this food consumption. As you were talking, I was thinking about the whole food chain. Here in Brantford, as an example, our intake on water regulations. Our food intake includes beaver, bear, opossum, natural vegetation, that is, water vegetation, the ground vegetation, waterfowl, wheat, frozen, cooked fish, and I hope those types of things are taken into consideration. We're talking about the dioxin and how that's going to affect Alaskans in our water control. I don't want it all lumped into one neat little task. As the commissioner pointed out, 104 communities don't have safe water. Well, we have 212 villages in the state of Alaska. Let's say 50% of communities, rural bush Alaska, are without safe water and sanitation. And I think that that whole food chain in rural Alaska has to be taken to a different context than what food chain is for your urban Alaska.
Would you like to address that, Dave?
I regret that the voice isn't coming over very well. Could I somehow get a summary of the question?
Well, it's my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Representative Lincoln, in your consideration of the consumption rates, are you delineating between urban and rural consumption, because the rural consumption includes many things besides the fish, and I think it was the intent of Representative Lincoln to find out, you know, how are you dealing with this impact, because you would definitely have a different safety factor there as far as protecting the people in rural Alaska as far as establishing these different standards. Does that adequately summarize your question, Representative Lincoln?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That does pretty well summarize it. I just want fully understand that our food chain that we use here is a daily consumption. It is not sporadic consumption of I'm getting a echo back on this. I can hear myself talking, so it's kind of hard to talk into this mic. I was talking about we use vegetation, water vegetation. We use muskrat, bees, it goes on just fish. And pest consumption is much greater than urban, so I want to know that there is a large delineation. Thank you.
Okay. With respect to the fish, we clearly recognize that, let's say, subsistence and sport consumptions may be very much greater. And again, the fish and game data indicate that subsistence consumption runs up to 600, 700, 800 pounds per year in rural villages. Although that is that's clean fish weight, so I think you have to about cut that in half to represent the consumed portion. But still, you're down to 200, 300, 400 pounds per year, and that's only a pound per day. It's not really, a large amount in those circumstances. And specifically around the pulp mills, there are subsistence and high sport consumers as well. One can look at different values of fish consumption within the range. The average value is an obvious thing to start with. After that, we look at percentiles like 90, 95, 99 percentile. And that means that if we have a 78-pound average, figure there for Southeast, the 90th percentile might be 150 pounds. That means that 90% of the people eat that much or less. 95th percentile might be 175 pounds. 95% would eat that much or less. EPA is actively considering revising their values, and they have a group in Washington, D.C. that specifically works on fish consumption, and I've been told by the chief of that group that they are pushing for raising the national figure to the 90th or 95th percentile. So there is a move in that direction. Where we are in a situation of having proposed 5 pounds with an average of 78 pounds, I think you can see that we hadn't gone beyond that to consider 90th or 95th. It's a policy issue, and it comes down again to what segment or extent of the population are you going to bring in and go with the average and go with high-end consumers, and how much allowable consumption do you want to project in targeting that 100,000 risk.
Thank you, Dave. What I'd like to do now is go on, and I'd like to ask first Jared McEwen, are you online? Before George Yaska and Gershon Cohen and Mike Wendig, would you please come forward and occupy these three chairs? We're going to try a panel discussion. This will be the first panel presentation, and what we'll do is offer each candidate or each member of the panel 5 minutes to present their comments, and then we'll go to the second panel. The first panel is Jared McEwen, Rick Yost, hopefully in Cordova, George Yaska, Gershon Cohen, and Mike Wendig here, and Nancy Lefko in Valdez. And then we'll go to panel two with Ed Yutkin and Rick Harris and Carl Hanneman. And I understand Charlie Bode was going to be in place of Jack Cottrell, but I understand you're there. Please let us know which of you two gentlemen will be presenting something on the panel, or if you both would like to, that's fine too, and then Becky Gay. So we'll get started with Jerry McEwen in Cordova. Jerry, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please go ahead.
Mr. Chairman and other committee members, my name is Jerry McEwen. I'm president of the United Fishermen of Alaska. The United Fishermen of Alaska is very concerned that the revised proposed regulations by the DEC, the Alaska Quality Standards, will lead to the decrease of fish habitat and reduction in fish populations and erosion of consumer confidence and Alaska seafood quality. and that's a big thing to us. We've been battling that for the last year, as everybody knows. ULA believes that these proposed revisions will have tremendous negative impacts, both short and long term, which will be felt statewide to the entire seafood industry in Alaska. ULA believes that these potential economic impacts to the seafood industry have not been addressed at all by DEC in its haste to implement its own standards before higher standards are set by EPA by the National Toxic Rule. UFA finds that DEC's approach lacks both balance and foresight and is very confusing to a lot of people in Alaska. Seafood is Alaska's number one export. Alaska seafood production ranks among states and first among states and fifth among nations. The seafood industry is Alaska's largest private sector employer, providing jobs for 1 in 20 Alaskans, 70,000 seasonal, and 33,000 year-round jobs. The seafood industry is Alaska's second largest revenue generator, $31 million in taxes in 1991. Besides exporting this resource, Alaskans eat a lot of it. Alaska meat consume more fish and shellfish than residents from any other state. Studies from the Subsistence Division estimate the average consumption of fish and shellfish among some subpopulations of residents exceed 200 pounds per person per year. And that doesn't include the commercial fishermen and everybody else that eats seafood and shellfish. Consumer confidence in Alaska seafood is driven by the perception that Alaska fish are pure because Alaska water is pure. The state invests and markets this image to Alaska seafood institution. For example, in February this year, the state went to bat for its seafood industry with a consumer report when their consumer reports were published in an article titled, "Is Our Fish Fit to Eat?" Those guys are still after that, "Our Fish Fit to Eat" thing. The report advised against eating salmon among other fish because of contamination with PCBs and heavy metals. Clean water, protected by strong water quality standards, play a key role in returning consumer confidence in Alaska seafoods. The state spent $13.5 million alone last year to market pure Alaska salmon from Alaska's pristine waters. Like many industries dealing with informed and concerned consumers, ADME recognizes economic advantages of the perception and consumer confidence in Alaska seafoods. So, going on here, the ADME includes the statement in its press packet. According to NOAA, Alaska has the world's most pristine waters. Analysis of strategic sample sites conducted by NOAA, such as the 1984 and 85 National Index Surveillance Projects West Coast annual report, shows Alaska's fishing grounds to be located in waters free from heavy pollutants. All coastal communities depend totally or partly for income from commercial fishing, and that's where other industries mostly are based right now. So we have to have a balance between all these industries to make this work. And downgrading water quality will not make it work in my mind. Governor Hickel also attended the UFA meeting last winter and assured us that we would be included, commercial fishing would be included in anything that was going to go on in the water quality standard. He was quoted in the Anchorage Times, 2/13/92, by saying that the protection. The protection of one of the greatest industries Alaska has is strong water quality. Governor Hickel supported UFA's request to have a fishing industry representative work closely with the statewide as he revised the water quality standards. DEC failed to carry through with the governor's promise to make it difficult for the commercial fishing industry to take part in all the planning that has been going on. I realize that we can't always just delay teleconferences and things because they're in the summer, but we would like to at least be, have a chance beyond just a few days to have some comments on something this large to the commercial fishing industry. I'll probably stop right there, but I had a few things to say back to the comments. Since Ricky and I didn't get in on the whole teleconference, I didn't get to hear everything everybody had to say, but some of the points here are very confusing about the consumption of fish to me, and I do not see, there might be some, you know, some, be able to make some concessions here and there, but I didn't understand why change their water quality standards, which is mostly done on all the coasts around. You think that the industry is going to stay right where it's at in Southeast, and we're going to have other industries moving in here, and we have to be able to monitor all of them and be able to have some kind of standard without going down. Right now, if we go down on our water quality standards, I see that we're going to have to do more monitoring, and the fishing industry itself is actually paying into this, and we're on the downside of this, and this is not for me to say against other industries. I'm all for any industry that will benefit the state of Alaska and stay within the bounds of the law. But we have to make sure that we have stringent laws in this state, because Washington State and all these other states have already made that big mistake. I do not want to see big signs with X's on them that you cannot take shellfish from this beach, you cannot do this, and you cannot do this, because the habitat is too fragile. And as these industries are moving closer and closer together, we have to make sure that we have stringent water quality regulations in place. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Next, I'd like to ask George Yaska, and if you would, George, please don't forget to turn the button on and speak right into the mic so that the people at teleconference can hear us. Then we'll go to Gershon Cohen, Mike Windig, Ricky Ott, and Nancy Lesko. Please, George, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is George Yaska. I work with Town and Chiefs Conference and represent the Town and Chiefs, where Town and Chiefs is a consortium of 43 Native communities in the interior of Alaska. And rapidly losing my voice, I've had a cold for a while, so I'll make the comments very short. But first, I'd just like to state, that we're really saddened to see the water quality standards that are proposed and by the Department of Environmental Conservation. While the department may not be able to say that these are standards are getting weaker, they are indeed real weak, and it provides a tremendous concern for the people in our region. And I'd like to reiterate that concern that Representative Lincoln had, and that he ought to and must consider other factors than just strictly fish consumption, because in our region, our subsistence take and virtually every other day in the general hunting season, general fishing season, commercial fishing season, we take a lot more than just fish. The pollutants, for instance, that are just in your mixing zone standards, often dump the toxics into places where there are a lot more than just fish. There's beaver, and the consumption for beaver should be quite high. There's muskrat at certain times of the year. There's the moose who feed on the vegetation at the bottom of the lakes is very high. And of course, moose take among all Alaskans are very high. And this is what I consider absolutely necessary for one of the factors that you might consider in the next 30 days. Certainly, I appreciate that you'll be extending the commentary and to address some of these other factors. And I hope that you'd address and include this factor. Just want to get some clarification too on the administration's intent on where we might go in water quality. Certainly, we'd like to remain state of the art. I know that's extremely difficult given the financial woes of our administration and in the near future that might be difficult. Several weeks ago I heard the Deputy Commissioner of the DEC, Mead Treadwell, speak about the standards that we have in the United States and in Alaska, and the standards that are in nations such as Romania, Bulgaria, and Eastern European nations, which are much lower than ours. So their environmental standards are real low. Those countries feel that they need to keep those standards low to remain competitive in the world market. And I just Mr. Turnbull mentioned that we need to level the playing field. We need to somehow compete on the worldwide market. And I just don't see that our industries are able to compete on a worldwide market. The pulp mills, the other industries, as well, that may not be true. I'm not entirely qualified to say so. I certainly should state that right up front. We just can't forsake our health, our standard of living, which is actually pretty good, to remain competitive worldwide when it might not be possible to remain competitive worldwide with whatever standard we may end up with. That's basically all that I have. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, George. Gershon Cohen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to thank you all for inviting me here to participate in this. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, during this hearing, we will no doubt enter into detailed scientific discussions of the proposed regulations. And while that information is of utmost importance to your evaluation, I would like to speak for several minutes to another important aspect of this discussion, a citizen's right to be informed and his or her ability to contribute to the formation of public policy. On July 9th, I attended a DEC Kensington Venture workshop in Haines. Late in the evening, Mr. Sturdivant from DEC introduced himself and stated that DEC was in the process of revising the water quality standards, that some of the proposed changes would affect the Kensington mine permit, and that the process was being expedited to reduce the amount of time before permits could be issued to the Kensington and AJ mines and the pulp mills in Sitka and Ketchikan. We were also informed that the public comment period, which was already in progress, would close on August 10th. At that time, there were no information packets in Haines. Approximately 24 people requested packets, which arrived July 20th. A brief examination of the revisions and their implications showed that 3 weeks was far too little time to analyze and produce responsible commentary on this 127-page document. A strong public outcry resulted in an 11th-hour extension by DEC that, due to public notice requirements, reset the closing of the comment period to September 30th. On July 23rd, I gave testimony at the public hearing in Juneau, stating that the scientific analysis presented by DEC appeared to have significant flaws, that the cited references were strongly biased, and that the comment period was still too short to allow for an adequate public review. In the ensuing weeks, a citizens group called the Alaska Clean Water Alliance, representing a variety of industries, environmental groups, native organizations, private businesses, and public health professionals, was formed to address the proposed revisions of the water quality standards. As we began to research information on the technical aspects of the regulations, we found that the timing of events indicated that the permitting requirements were being developed before the scientific analysis of the revisions had been completed or in some cases even begun. On April 7th, the draft NPDES permits were released by EPA to DEC and the pulp mills in Sitka and Ketchikan. These permits were to be based on the current DEC regs where they applied and on EPA standards where no state standard existed. In reaction to the requirements of these draft permits, a series of meetings began between DEC, EPA, DGC, mill representatives, and the AG's office beginning on April 9th to determine what steps would need to be taken to produce new operating permits that would be technically achievable by the pulp mills. The result of these meetings is summarized in this EPA table of potential compliance remedies. The first remedy listed under nearly every pollutant is to maximize the mixing zone. The present mixing zone language and the state regulations do not allow this, and the pulp mill's expired permits contain no mixing zone provisions. The second remedy listed is the revision of the water quality standards. The third remedy, facility modification, is listed as a last solution to complete the necessary changes for compliance and is often listed as not applicable. By the end of June, the fact sheets, questionnaires, and proposed revisions were completed by DEC, and the official public comment period was begun. In late August, I requested copies of the questionnaires and comments from the peer review group chosen by DEC. I received these in early September, but without any documents on the dioxin or arsenic fact sheets. I was later informed that these fact sheets, which contain the formulas and criteria used to determine the allowable discharge of these pollutants, were written just prior to the completion of the revision packet, and that DEC had still not received any peer review information on these proposals. The Alaska Clean Water Alliance continued to obtain scientific literature from the leading researchers across the country, several of whom are currently under contract to EPA to provide data for the EPA's reassessment of dioxin. This recent literature, which encompasses the last several years of dioxin research, shows that the carcinogenic effects of dioxin, as serious as they are, may be of secondary concern to the extremely low concentration, non-carcinogenic effects of dioxin on the immune and reproductive systems. Dioxin's toxicity is being demonstrated in a laboratory at dilution levels that would be virtually impossible to detect in the environment, and the intent of the EPA is to totally eliminate the production of dioxin-type compounds. DEC was asked why they were not considering this non-carcinogenic data, and indeed proposing to raise the legal level of dioxin released by approximately 85 times the EPA standard. The response was that in the past, the EPA had only considered the carcinogenic effects of dioxin. Yet in a DEC summary of the April 16th meeting in Seattle, it states, quote, "Latest word on EPA review of dioxin standard is that it will probably not go down. Reproductive and immune response effects have been found greater than carcinogenic effects," end quote. This information was not included in the material released by DEC to their peer reviewers or to the public. Perhaps the most serious omission from these fact sheets is the inadequate discussion of the cumulative impact on aquatic life and human health created by the lowering of all of these standards simultaneously, which will be far greater than the effect that any of these toxic compounds would create on their own. On September 24th, the Haines public hearing was held. More than 80 people came, over 50 signed up to testify. These people were tired of hearing that the fate of their fishing industry, their tourism industry, and the safety of their subsistence harvest were going to be decided by an agency that, despite repeated objections, was determined to factor into their equations that the people of Haines ate 5 pounds of fish per year, and that they should accept without choice a tenfold increase in their risk of getting cancer. After less than half an hour, they were convinced that their input would have no effect on these regulations, and were told that if they had policy questions, that they should direct these to higher DEC officials at some later date. So when one of the few local fishermen that has had the opportunity to testify because of the timing of the hearings suggested that the strongest statement that could be made to our government was to walk out of the hearing, the entire body got up and left. A copy of the EPA report on that hearing is in your packet. These proposed regulations will greatly change the pollution impacts of ongoing and planned future development. It is not the position or intent of AQUA to create permitting difficulties for the pulp mills or the mines. This is not a jobs versus environment issue. The technology exists for the safe operation of both the mining and pulp mill industries and the maintenance of the pure water so necessary for the other industries that support our economy. It is the clear mandate of the DEC to regulate and plan activities in our environment that protect the health and welfare of all Alaskans. We therefore recommend that DEC withdraw these revisions, adopt EPA guidelines where Alaska does not currently have a standard, and undertake a new, more realistic investigation of the scientific literature after scheduled hearings to enable an accurate assessment of public sentiment on these most important policy decisions for our future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. Mr. Wendy, if you would. And if you would, please be sure to identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Mike Winnick. I'm the staff attorney of the Trustees for Alaska. I'd like to start by addressing the issue of whether these proposals really weaken Alaska's water quality standard. We heard testimony this morning that the intent is not really to weaken the standards. Well, it's technically true for the health-based standards for toxics that they don't weaken existing standards in the sense that there are no existing standards, and for arsenic, they just will codify the existing standard. But it's also true that they're attempting to prevent EPA from imposing more stringent standards. So in that sense, they really are trying to weaken a future standard that would be imposed nationally. But as for the other proposals that are on the books now, all or most of them will weaken existing standards, and some of which relate indirectly to toxins. I'd like to just briefly run through those other proposals. There's a proposal to delete references to suspended sediment in the sediment criteria for drinking water and recreation. There's a proposal to further limit the scope of waters that are subject to the water quality standards by in effect allowing polluters to decide to adopt portions of natural waters as part of their treatment systems and thereby not have to meet water quality standards within those portions. The mixing zone revisions will have the net effect of making it harder for DEC to deny a mixing zone in the face of uncertain science regarding the effects of a given pollutant. that's clearly a weakening of the existing mixing zone regulation. The mixing zone provisions do include new standards for fresh flowing streams, and in that sense, they are more strict. The problem is that these new standards are in many cases so vague that they're essentially meaningless, or where they are specific, they essentially, by regulation, allow polluters to do things that DEC shouldn't be allowing them to do now on a case-by-case basis without express regulation. The proposals recommend substantially weakening the hydrocarbon standard. The proposals recommend weakening the standard for picocoliform by adopting an EPA standard, which EPA recognizes is out of date. Proposals also have a provision for allowing polluters to pollute up to levels of natural characteristics. Well, that's a weakening of the existing standard, because there already is an existing standard on the books that says in certain circumstances polluters can pollute up to levels of natural characteristics. But the existing standard says no matter what, they can't pollute to levels that will impair the existing designated uses for those water bodies. That provision is left out of the new proposal, so that is also a weakening of the existing standard. Now, stepping back, we've heard testimony about this being part of a larger triennial comprehensive review of water quality standards, and Dave mentioned that this may be the first time that Alaska is actually on time in reviewing in conducting their triennial review. Well, they may be on time only for those standards that they want to weaken, or in the case of toxics, that they want to prevent EPA from imposing more stringent standards. They're not at time in terms of doing a comprehensive overall review of all the standards, of responding to all the comments, not just comments saying weaken the standards or beat EPA to the punch, but other comments, those submitted by trustees and other environmental groups and citizens, saying that existing standards have been made stringent. And I don't think DEC actually has a schedule for responding to the remaining comments, for addressing the other water quality standards, for really completing its triennial review. I think they don't have a schedule, and I don't think they have the staff to really do it. Now, I've been working for trustees for about 3.5 years. Most of my time is spent reviewing DEC permits and reading fact sheets and decision documents, and I have to say that these proposals are the most poorly justified standards or agency decision I've seen in 3.5 years. In many cases, there are no cites to scientific literature. Where there are cites, then it's often to newspapers or non-scientific journals. And where there are cites to scientific journals, they're blatantly one-sided. There are vague references to the need to weaken standards or prevent EPA from adopting more stringent standards because of cost to various industries. Well, if costs are relevant at all, and we submit they aren't in determining water quality criteria to protect designated uses. But if costs are relevant, the cost analysis here is a joke. As to the pulp mills, there wasn't any kind of comprehensive analysis of the cost to the pulp mills before DEC came out with these proposed standards. But even if there was for the pulp mills, DEC is proposing to make statewide public policy decisions that apply not only to dioxin statewide, but that will set a precedent and apply to other pollutants statewide based essentially on the unverified claims, economic claims of pulp mills. If economics are really going to be brought into the picture, then DEC should have done a far more comprehensive study of economics than they did the basically hand-waving references to economics that preceded their proposal. Last general concern is that in many cases DEC, or in several cases, DEC is proposing new terms or to expand the reach of existing terms that aren't really defined. DEC doesn't know what they mean, yet they've gone ahead and they come out with a proposal now, the regulation now, and they'll define them later. Well, I don't think it's fair for the public to accept that kind of approach, because we're essentially, we don't know what we're buying into. The proposals are either so vague that they give DEC unlimited discretion on a case-by-case basis, or they're so vague that DEC won't even be able to make the case-by-case decisions that DEC says are necessary. One last general point is, where do we go from here? What do we do? We now have a set of proposals on the table. Well, I think the legislature Minnesota ought to pressure DEC to basically go back to the drawing board, start over again, do a more comprehensive scientific analysis, public policy analysis, and come up with a whole new set of proposals, comprehensive triennial review of all water quality standards, and give the public a full opportunity to comment on those new proposals. I think the legislature ought to get involved more directly and look into legislative solutions to some of these major public policy decisions. The decision regarding acceptable risk levels, 10 to the minus 5th, 10 to the minus 6, I don't think it's proper for DEC to be making those decisions shooting from the hip. These are really broader public policy decisions that the legislature ought to look into playing a more active role in. Another issue that the legislature ought to get involved is mixing zones. We ought to have a statutory mixing zone provision if we're going to allow it at all, which is questionable, and not let DEC be making the kinds of decisions they've been making. I think that the hottest issue is dioxin, the health-based criteria, and at this point I prefer to stop and let the panel ask questions on that issue or some of the other issues that we mentioned. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mandy. Ricky Ott, are you there in Cordova?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can hear you. If you would, please identify yourself and who you represent and then continue with your comments. And we're trying to shoot for about 5 minutes per participant.
Yes, my name is Ricky Ott. I'm the Habitat Chairman for United Fishermen of Alaska. I have a master's and a doctorate in marine pollution, and I've spent 12 years doing research prior to becoming a commercial fisherman, specifically in marine pollution. I fail to see why it's so easy to see that there are health problems from drinking bad water, but it is so difficult to see that there are parallel fish and wildlife health problems when these animals drink and live and or live in the water. Just as people need clean water, so do fish and wildlife. This is in reference to Commissioner Sandor's remarks earlier about people and the drinking water sanitation problems in rural Alaska. Fish especially need clean water because fish are like little sponges. They soak up pollutants from the water. They breathe pollutants across their gills. They absorb pollutants due to lipids in the eggs and the yolk sacs and the developing fry stages. And they eat pollutants through the food. DEC has failed to consider that many life stages, younger life stages of fish and shellfish spend a great deal of time in near shore areas and could accumulate and be exposed to pollutants. The cleaner the water, cleaner the fish. It's as simple as that. Other states which have allowed their waters to be polluted to benefit the dirty water industry have lost their fisheries. If Alaska loses its fisheries, it will put more people out of business than if we lose any other industry. At this point, I'd like to say that we fully concur and agree with the excellent testimony of Gershon Cohn and Mike Winnie. I will just highlight at this point some of our major concerns with mixing zones. Mixing zones are a loophole in the Clean Water Act. And it is through this loophole that the lower 48 has allowed their water body, the quality, water quality in their waters to deteriorate. DEC's proposed revision will make this loophole even bigger. And it will make it big enough to drive two pulp mills and the AJ and Kensington mine through this loophole if DEC is allowed to carry through with their proposed revision. And I'd like to remind the committee members and on August 29th, there was an article published in the Anchorage Daily News that listed the two pulp mills and the Unocal plant in Cook Inlet as among the nation's top 100 polluters. The state cannot continue to set policy that allows these industries to pollute to the detriment of other resource users. Water is a public resource. It is a shared resource. And standards must consider all resource users. If the state is going to continue to allow mixing zones, and there is good argument for not doing so, But if we are going to allow mixing zones, then UFA must insist that we adopt a statutory standard of no discharge of toxic materials in toxic amounts. Specifically on these regulations, regarding the vague language on mixing zones in streams and rivers, we would like to impose concrete physical limits on extent a mixing zone may go up both upstream and downstream, and UFA is recommending that mixing zones in rivers not exceed 10% of the width of the stream or exceed 10% of the minimum flow of the stream. Also, we would not mixing zones should only be allowed in rivers and streams with concurrence by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Mixing zones should not result in any reduction of fish population. We were very alarmed DEC's language that says mixing zones will be allowed unless there is a permanent displacement of fish. And we question, what are we supposed to do? Wait until, like Idaho State with the Snake River, where only one or two fish come back, and then say, well, it looks like a permanent displacement. We don't want any reduction in fish population. And last on mixing zones, we want mixing zones prohibited in fish spawning areas. I will just briefly address dioxin, arsenic, and total hydrocarbons. As a scientist, I was appalled at the information, public information put out by the Department of Environmental Conservation. It was extremely misleading, it was biased, and in at least two cases, it was actually false. And these two cases are being addressed right now. We're in discussions with the ombudsman. Specifically, one, the 6.5 consumption rate grams per person per day. If you look in the EPA's technical support documents, there are four levels that EPA uses for fish consumption rate. The lowest rate is 6.5 grams per person per day, but that only includes consumption from fresh and estuarian waters. The next level is 20 grams per person per day, and that also includes marine. DEC failed to notify the public of this in their public issue papers. When there was massive public outcry over the low fish consumption rate, DEC changed their tune, its stride here, and are now claiming that the 6.5 is only contaminated seafood consumption. That UFA checked with EPA risk assessment and was told that the 6.5 gram per day and the other three standards are based on average consumption, not consumption of contaminated fish. And the reason for this is to protect high-end consumers that might eat 100% of locally caught seafood. And so those consumers must be protected. We believe that this was false information put out by DEC. The second area of false information that we are addressing with the ombudsman is the total hydrocarbons. DEC maintains that only the dissolved fraction of hydrocarbons are biological to organisms. This is false. I believe that even small children are taught that if they eat toxic substances, whether they're in liquid or solid form, they're going to suffer from poisoning. And what we're talking about here are particulate hydrocarbons are toxic to marine life, like filter feeders, clams, mussels, zooplankton, pink salmon, that would take up these compounds as particulates and transfer them into the food web. At this point, I guess I'd just like to say that UFA has taken the time to write about 40 pages worth of technical comments. I hope the committee gets all these comments. New information is coming in every day, specifically regarding dioxin. our best information at the time when we wrote these criteria led us to a criteria of 0.00006 parts per quadrillion, and it looks now that that might even be too low of a limit to protect people. So I urge committee members to take a look at our full set of comments. And the last two things I'd like to say is that UFA is recommending that we do go back to the drawing board, the DEC does, and establishes a clean water task force with all concerned people and industries, and that we fully address this issue that has the ability affect integrity of entire ecosystems, statewide public health, and all fish and wildlife resources. And finally, I'd like to say that because of three broken phones, we were not able to hear the entire first hour of testimony, and we would certainly appreciate a copy of the tape of this testimony being sent to the CDSU office in Cordova. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Sott. We will ensure that you get a copy. Ms. Nancy Letko, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and all of you have taken this Saturday to assemble to discuss the reformulation of Alaska's public policy regarding our water resources. My name is Nancy Letko. I am president of the Alaska for Wilderness Recreation Tourism Association, or AWTA. AWTA represents approximately 300 members of the natural resource-dependent recreational users and tourism industry. We market Alaska's outstanding scenery, wildlife, sports fishing and hunting opportunities, and healthy seafood. Many Alaskans define themselves in terms of our land, air, and water resources. For them, a semi-subsistence lifestyle based on recreational hunting, sports fishing, and shellfish gathering have long been central to their sense of being Alaskan. DEC's proposed regulations at best offer a disruption to a way of life, at worst, ill health and death. Like all industries, tourism is highly competitive. Recently, the World Tourism Organization announced that in revenues generated, tourism is now the number one industry in the world. Alaskan tourism businesses and the state of Alaska compete for market dollars with recreation and tourism destinations around the world. The vacationing public, people like yourselves, care about their own health and safety and about the quality of the experience they are purchasing. As policymakers, each of you must decide whether or not the state has an obligation to protect the health and economic well-being of not only its residents, but also its visitors. Since tourists are travelers who are generally unfamiliar with local policies, proposed water quality regulations place them at special risk. Many residents and visitors consume large quantities of seafood and other animals at the top of the food chain as a result of their Alaskan vacation. If the draft regulations are accepted, who is going to inform them and their families the state has decided that it is right for them to assume the risk of developing cancer or other illnesses in order to help the logging and mining and petroleum industries? Whose responsibility is it to tell them that they should not eat more than 5 pounds of the fish they have caught in Alaska? Failure to inform them of the increased risk is certainly not right. Because a tourist is a stranger, a non-resident, it is still not morally justifiable to place that person at a greater risk. But here is the rub. Posting and vigorously informing the tourists of their risk in consuming fish will adversely affect the sports fishing, charter boats, kayaking, and other water-dependent industries throughout the state, not just the affected area. As we have all recently learned, without a multi-million-dollar advertising campaign, an environmental problem in one part of the state can have severe economic repercussions throughout the Alaskan tourism industry. Unfortunately, even a multi-million-dollar advertising campaign did not save many Prince William Sound tourism businesses that did not survive EVO. And there are no laws which hold a polluter responsible for the economic losses sustained by recreational users or the tourism industry as a result of chronic or catastrophic pollution. So what is the best public policy for balance? maximum protection for the population at highest risk. As a common sense public policy, it would seem that the resource needs of all industries based on natural resources should be considered in managing the state's resources. Alaska's tourism is a high-dollar, low-impact, sustainable industry. A greater percentage of Alaskans are employed by the tourism industry than by any other industry. There are over 1,000 lodges and charter sports fishing boats, to say nothing of the many more recreational fishing and hunting cabins and boats in Alaska. However, despite the demonstrated economic importance of Alaska's natural resource-based recreation and tourism, DEC's proposed water quality regulations consider only the economic effects of regulations on the regulated industry. The Arctic Board believes that a more equitable and economically justifiable public policy would be to consider all economic and social impacts that, any proposed reduction in water quality may have. Alaska's traditional polluting industries must be required to internalize the cost of maintaining water quality and not pass the burden of their business expenses onto either the state or other segments of the economy. To promote a more equitable and socially responsible business climate in Alaska, our board requests you to consider two items of legislation. Legislation enabling citizens to sue state agencies that are not adequately implementing and enforcing laws designed to protect public health, and two, legislation that would enable tourism businesses to recover economic losses sustained as a result of another industry's chronic or catastrophic pollution. The Alaska Wellness, Recreation, and Tourism Association's board appreciates the opportunity to comment on the economic and social effects of DEC's proposed revisions that will directly affect not only the livelihoods of our members, but more important, their and our clients' long-term health. We hope you will consider not only the economic desires of industries requesting weaker standards, but also the obligation of the state not to unnecessarily place certain groups of citizens or visitors at greater health risk merely to increase the profits of others. Good water quality is so important to the health of Alaskan residents and the tourism industry that Alaska should have the highest water quality standards in the nation and not be among the poorest. Thank you very much for inviting us to comment.
Thank you, Ms. Lefko. That concludes panel number one. We would ask that you, if you have questions of either agency, we'll go ahead and hear panel two first, and then we'll come back and try to get the dialogue going like that. So while you are taking your seats here, I would ask that maybe you could come back up later. Ms. Gay, if you would come up, please, being the only person on the panel here in Anchorage. And we'll go ahead and start with Mr. Ed Utkin, and then after that, we'll go to Rick Harris, Carl Hanneman, and Jack Cartrell, if you're going to be with us, Jack, and Charlie Bodie and Becky Gay, Representative Zawacki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question was, I was wondering if we are going to be allowed to ask any questions or make any comments from each of these panels.
What I'd like to do, Representative Zawacki, is to hear from the panels and then have the panels the opportunity to ask questions. And then I would like to hear some public testimony, because people have taken a Saturday here, and then I'd like to, after the public testimony, give the opportunity to anybody here at the table to say whatever they want. The primary purpose here is to gather as much public input as we possibly can and go from there. Did you have any problem with that?
Well, my only comment, Mr. Chairman, is we also represent the public statewide as representatives. And as these people are speaking, I think we should have that opportunity to respond to some of their comments. I'm not sure if 2 or 3 hours from now these people are going to be sitting on teleconference, because I think some of their questions and comments should be debated and maybe even challenged. And but as a representative of the people, I would hope that I am given that opportunity.
Well, you will certainly be given that opportunity. I'm just trying to maximize input in the 3 hours that we've allotted to try to keep on schedule. It was my original intent to be open for questions like that, but sometimes when you get behind Representative Zawacki, I want to make sure that we are fair to the people who come out, as well as ourselves as representatives of the people. So thank you. If you would please, Ed Yudkin. Are you there, Ed, in Sitka?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, are you hearing me clearly?
Yes, we certainly are. And if you would identify yourself and who you represent, and then please continue with your comments. Well, what we're trying to do is hold the panel members to about 5 minutes, so we give everybody a fair trial. But if you would, please, Ed.
I'll be brief. For the record, my name is Edward Upkin, and I'm testifying today as the Director of Environmental Affairs for Alaska Pulp Corporation. I have not had the opportunity to discuss my comments with the Ketchikan Pulp people, but I believe what I have to say today reflects the attitude and position and facts for both mills. As an introduction, I think I would like to summarize the present situation by making 5 points, and I'll keep them extremely brief. The first point is that the issuance of the preliminary draft NPDES permits for Alaska's 2 pulp mills and 30-plus mining operations this past spring represents a quantum leap in discharge control and monitoring for all present and future holders of NPDES permits in Alaska. My second point is these new permits, no matter how modified, will require major changes in monitoring and analysis by the 2 pulp mills at an increased annual cost measured in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. Thirdly, the Alaska Pulp Company mill in Sitka cannot meet a number of the proposed new discharge limits in the preliminary draft NPDES permit that are based on present state water quality standards. Fourthly, present estimates show that the proposed limits in the preliminary draft NPDES permits would require the 2 pulp mills to change their manufacturing process at a cost of several hundred million dollars and several years of time, with no assurance at this present time of being able to make a product that our customers will purchase or use. And lastly, on the other hand, changes to state water quality standards can, and I want to emphasize that word can, be made that will continue to protection of the environment while reducing the present extreme impact on the manufacturing process employed by the pulp mills. So what does this all mean in terms of how we view the present state water quality standards proposals of the department? Briefly and simply, we support ADC's efforts to modify present state water quality standards on the basis of current scientific knowledge. We have submitted detailed comments in conjunction with the Producers Council of Alaska on these things. In Maine, we support a lot of the efforts. We have technical comments in a number of places. Some other places, we would like to see significant changes. Secondly, we urge that ADEC continues its triennial water quality standards review by addressing the water quality standard base limits, these discharge limits that we have in the draft preliminary NPDES permits that have not been considered to date in the current proposals. There are a number of water quality standards that have as much significance as NOx and everything else we've talked about this morning that are presently not being reviewed and are in the NPDES permits that have been proposed for the mills and the mining industry. So that leads me to my last comment or proposal or position, or however you want to take it. That is that we request that the state urge the EPA to allow DEC to complete its review of all the water quality standards that have been used in these draft permits before the limitations are irrevocably put in place for the pulp mills, the mining industry, and all other industries in the state that are going to be impacted now and in the future. For that, I'll be happy to answer questions, and I'll keep it brief so there's more time for everybody else.
Thank you, Ed. I'm going to go ahead through the panel discussions, and then we're going to have questions at the end, if you don't mind. Is Rick Harris there, representing the Alaska Forest Association in Juneau? Rick Harris, are you there?
Rick is there.
Okay, thank you. Carl Hanneman, are you there in Fairbanks? Hello, Fairbanks? We'll come back to Fairbanks. Let me go back to Juneau. Jack Cottrell, are you there, and did you wish to comment today?
Jack will be up here in just a minute.
Okay, thank you very much. Jack, while you're coming, if you would please identify yourself for the record and who you represent. And then after Jack Cottrell, we'll have Charlie Bodie in Fairbanks, if he's there, and then Becky Gay here in Anchorage. Hello, Jack, are you there?
Yes,
Jack, you're not coming in very clear. Would you start over, please?
I had to switch microphones here. I was getting some feedback. My name is Jack Cottrell. I'm the environmental manager for Greens Creek Mining Company, located just out of Juneau. Speaking for Greens Creek Mining Company, which is an active mine, hard rock mine underground here in Juneau, we support DEC's efforts in the triennial review. And specifically, although most of the dialogue today has polarized around dioxin and mixing zones, we do support the changes in the cell basalts from sediment. We think that will give a much more viable comparison for numbers. We also support the changes in the fecal coliform, and we support the color changes. However, we will submit some specific comments related to those. We also support the removal of the 0.00196-hour LC50. And we support the changes that DEC has had in dioxin and chloroform. We do have some concerns about the approach DEC is taking regarding arsenic. And we believe that the agency should look at the chemical species, which is going to cause a hazard, and not look at it across the board. The species that will cause a hazard is trivalent form, and it should be that is regulated and not a total arsenic. We do have some concerns about chronic toxicity wording, and especially in the phrase, in the discretion of, we believe that the rules and regulations should point out specific steps that a company should take to obtain a permit and not leave anything to the discretion of the agency. The mixing zone, as they're proposed, we don't believe really accomplishes what the DEC is trying to accomplish their goal.
Jack, you slipped off. Are you still there?
Yes, I guess we're back here.
Okay.
My last comment was on mixing zones, and I'm off. We can knock him back again. Okay. Don't believe that the language accomplishes the goals of the DEC. And we would ask that the DEC would consider our specific comment when we submit them in writing. Last concern that we have, and that is about applying drinking water standards to seawater. We see that there's no correlation to apply drinking water standards to seawater. And other than supporting the DEC in their efforts, and we would encourage them to continue the triennial review so that we can get some, that the standards set and we can get about business, we would request that DEC continue. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jack. Next, is anybody there in Fairbanks? Charlie Buddy Bodie or Carl Hanneman? Are you there in Fairbanks?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is Carl Hanneman in Fairbanks. Can you hear us now?
Yes, we can hear you now, Carl. Please go ahead and identify yourself and who you represent.
Okay, thank you. Yes, this is Carl Hanneman. I'm president of Alaska Plaster Development, and I'm here today speaking as representative of Alaska Miners Association as chairman of the Water Quality Committee. All right.
Thank you very much, Carl. Appreciate your input. Charlie Bodie, are you there in Fairbanks?
Yes, Representative David.
Did you wish to be part of the panel discussion at this time?
Certainly, I'll go ahead and make a few comments. My name is Charlie Bodie. I'm Vice President of Government Relations with Yucca Valley Coal Mine. I'll be addressing my comments on behalf of the company and also as an officer with the Alaska Coal Association. First of all, I'd like to state that I'm a 34-year resident of the interior of Alaska and a 20-year participant in the continuing saga of Alaska's clean water program. Having said that, I would like to first and foremost say that I think the ADEC did the public, industry, and others one big favor in this last round, and that was by issuing regulatory issues paper that expounded upon the changes that were being proposed by the department. I think this was the first time I've ever seen a non-threatening, non-technical, very positive tone set forth with a set of changes to where someone didn't have to just sit down and read regulations, but actually had part of that thought process of what went on behind some of these changes. The positive changes that I believe the coal industry is probably most focused on right now is that DEC has taken the initiative to look at the ambient levels in waters of the state and have finally recognized that certainly should be a benchmark in defining the numeric water quality criteria. I think that's a bold step towards recognizing especially the diversity in this state between the geographic, climatic, and probably moreover the geomorphic setting in which some of the industries of this state operate in, and which those industrial activities may occur throughout Alaska. My company alone has spent tens of thousands of dollars trying to prepare larger settling facilities and everything else to clean water to near drinking water standards, only to discharge through an outfall onto a naturally occurring septic system. And I somehow see that yields no benefits to the state of Alaska, to my company, or anyone else. Changes that DEC also made as part of this regulatory package to better define their role in exercising their responsibilities, certifying their responsibilities under federal water-related permits. I thought that was a nice addition. Carl, I agree with Carl Hahnemann's assessment that the AMA has given the ADEC some good comments regarding the mixing zone, and I won't give you any more on that. Suffice to say that I do think mixing zones are a viable part of any water quality program, and that this is something that DEC, again, has taken a massive amount of time on over the last decade to come up with something workable. And lastly, I would like to say that in amending and adding certain definitions into this regulatory reform package, that, again, the ADEC should be complimented on the ability that the public will have to better understand and assess some of the program's intent by having some of these definitions in place. There have been people who have suggested today that we would, quote, be better off to throw the baby out with the bathwater here and go back to ground zero. I think that would be a major mistake. I think that there are many good parts to this regulatory reform package that the ADEC has proposed to the public. And if there are certain problems, then we can identify those and work on those separately. But to totally ignore the work that's gone into this whole package would be a shame. And thank you, Representative Davidson, and members of your committee who also shared their Saturday on this important issue.
Thank you very much, Charlie. We have to come back now to Anchorage and Becky Gay. Becky Gay.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Becky Gay. I'm the Executive Director of the Resource Development Council. We represent a full array of resource industries in the state, as well as many municipalities who are not being heard at this hearing. We appreciate being able to testify at a legislative hearing on an administrative process that will probably end up in court. And we do hope all these delays in these hearings really are going to result in a better product, and that all of us are really working towards that end, not to jeopardize the hard work that all of us are putting into it, whether or not we produce a final product. We also do support EDC and its efforts to table standards to Alaska and add a human life criteria to water quality standards without messing around with the aquatic life criteria. RDC believes that the standards should be based on good science, that they should reflect benefits which are real, and cost and benefits should be balanced. We believe that the standards should be technically achievable and economically feasible, and balance health and economic realities that are facing Alaskans. RDC believes the standards, the water quality standards should reflect natural water conditions, and limits in general should not be set to exceed native water quality. RDC also believes and supports the more realistic risk level that EDC is proposing. We believe that the standards should provide adequate environmental protection without unreasonably impairing domestic, municipal, recreational, commercial, and industrial use of the water. We believe that DEC and EPA should acknowledge the global economies in which Alaska participates and not unduly give Alaska, in particular their shore-based industries, a deadly disadvantage, in particular on the world markets in regard to fisheries processing. And from a personal focus, having lived in a honey bucket community for a couple of years, I believe that it's very important that what Commissioner Sander addressed, the human situation, is very, very important, particularly in the 104 communities that aren't being heard here today, but don't have just a risk assessment better than one-on-one or one-to-one, as Commissioner Sander has noted. And again, we encourage and urge that this dialogue continues without unduly delaying the process. We do believe that it takes a strong economy in Alaska to provide the resources in the state budget, to fund state programs, to deal with such vital issues as water quality. And we hope that EPA in Alaska will participate in this process without driving the process and relay how hard we Alaskans are working on this water quality issue and not step in too soon or override our efforts by having us take too long for their own reasons. I'd also like to add that the Metal Chuck Finley, the water quality manager for Region 10, will be speaking at RDC's conference on November 19th and 20th, and I urge, along with Commissioner Sander, and I urge all of you to attend if you possibly can. We do have happy to raise if you don't attend the whole thing, but it will be a chance for him to speak to the regulated community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gay. We have approximately 15 members of the public who would like to offer some comments, so what I would like to do is to go ahead and request that they limit their comments to 2 or 3 minutes, then come back to the panel questions. You can stay right there if you'd like to, Becky. Then we'll continue on from there. So first, I would like to go to Valdez, Mr. Tom Van Brocklin. Did you wish to have any public testimony?
Yes, Joe, can you hear me?
Yes, you can, please. And please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Tom Van Brocklin. I've lived in Valdez since 1980, and Cordova is my hometown. During the last 3 years, as an aide to Representative Gene Kabina, I've been particularly focused in the area of Alaska's salmon fisheries and marketing. Mr. Chairman, I would like to speak briefly this morning on the subject of marketing and public perception. Every year in this country, for that matter across the world, billions of dollars are spent to convince consumers to buy certain products. Since it is the producers, at least initially, who have to pay the bill for marketing, for advertising, it would seem obvious they respect the significance of public perception. In brief, people are often convinced by outside influences to consider more than the cost of a product when purchasing it. Mr. Chairman, since the 70s, the state has spent many millions on developing the production end of our salmon industry. But in the same time frame, the industry began phase two, which includes improvements in harvesting and quality control. We have now seen over the last few years that global markets and the expansion of the world salmon supply, particularly as a result of salmon farming, has necessitated a stronger focus on marketing by our state and our salmon industry. At the same time, it has been recognized that the primary marketing value that Alaska has over its global competitors in regard to selling its salmon is its clean coastal waters. referred to by NOAA as the world's most pristine waters. Mr. Chairman, over the decades, we have watched many of our country's industries either move overseas or head south of the continental U.S. border. Currently, Alaska sells over 90% of its king and sockeye salmon to Japan and is fighting for market salmon shares in our own country and in Europe. All indicators are that salmon farms will continue to increase globally and that Japan has plans to expand its own salmon productions off its coast and the coast of China to such levels that by the year 2000, it may replace most of the salmon currently purchased from Alaska. My point is this. The state of Alaska is currently spending millions to help market its salmon. A key component in this marketing in the future will be healthy seafood available from a clean environment. Reducing safeguards on our primary marketing sell is to take a major risk on losing our basic marketing ingredient. Public perception, once molded, is very difficult to change. Hence the scare that hit our fishery industry when the Consumer Report on Fish Quality came out last year. Happily, that focus stayed away from Alaska seafood. Mr. Chairman, the current revisions proposed by DEC regarding Alaska's water quality standards may well have a fundamental impact on the future public perception of Alaska's environment and consequently on its ability to sell its salmon in an increasingly competitive global market. Since the state government expects such renewable resources as salmon to pick up the economic tax gap in the future as the oil industry's contribution wanes, such regulatory considerations must be carefully assessed. One approach would be a clean water task force, so that before such regulations are modified, all Alaskans can be sure of a thorough, nonpartisan evaluation of all the relevant facts. The stakes are simply too high to do otherwise. Finally, Mr. Chairman, I have attended a number of hearings over the last 6 months regarding regulations involving industries such as the oil industry. In nearly every instance, the involved industries have requested that before new regulations are implemented, before new standards are established, that adequate reviews be undertaken. Given the importance of these clean water regulations to the health of Alaskans, the fish industry, and its marketing efforts, as well as the economic health of our economy, I don't believe this review should be any less exhausting. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom. Next, I'd like to go to Petersburg. Chris Noros, are you there? And after that, Dennis McFadden and Becky Nye. Chris?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Chris Norris, and I'm here on behalf of the Petersburg Vessel Owners Association. I want to make this committee aware of the fact that Petersburg was denied access to the teleconference sponsored by DEC on September 24th and 25th. This teleconference was not offered statewide, but rather was limited to 15 sites. Five of these sites also had the luxury of a public hearing in their community. DEC's proposed revisions of Alaska's water quality standards reflect major technical and public policy changes in the state's management of its water resources. As a result, we believe DEC has the obligation to ensure that the public has had a reasonable opportunity to participate in the process. Many of the proposed changes raise significant concerns that Alaska's fish and wildlife resources and the commercial subsistence and recreational uses that rely upon resources will not be maintained. We concur with ADF&G's Habitat Division comments on the proposed water quality revisions on page 1, where they state, "We believe the proposed chronic toxicity standards and mixing zone provisions have a high potential for diminishing the productive capabilities of Alaska's fresh and marine waters, and in some cases creating conditions directly toxic to valuable fish and wildlife resources." While the Petersburg Vessel Owners Association plans to send detailed comments to the proposed revisions, we would like to just point out a few major concerns at this time. With regard to human health criteria, we believe that DEC has not considered potential economic effects on the seafood industry, which may result from deterioration of water quality due to the extremely lenient criteria proposed for silver pollutants, dioxin, arsenic, and chloroform. We find DEC's proposed dioxin standard is unacceptable. DEC is justifying its choice of the health risk of 1 in 100,000 on claims of economic considerations, basically a concern that more stringent standards would possibly bankrupt one of the mills. It appears that DEC has completely ignored possible economic impacts on the commercial fishing industry in proposing dioxin criteria. We also believe that DEC has chosen an unrealistically low consumption rate for Alaska. We contend, and we believe that the DEC issue paper supports this, that Alaska has subpopulations of sport, commercial, and subsistence fishers who consume much much greater amounts of fish than the national average. In addition, many subsistence users consume most, if not all, portions of the fish, and therefore may be exposed to higher levels of contaminants because pollutants tend to be stored in the organs, gills, and other tissue. We believe a fish consumption rate of 65 grams per day is appropriate rather than the figure proposed by DEC. With arsenic, we feel the state has failed to provide scientifically defensible rationale for proposing criteria that is significantly different than EPA rationale. Because arsenic is chemically complex and able to shift forms readily, EPA criteria measures total arsenic. However, the state ignores this and proposes to base regulations only on the presence of organic arsenic. The toxic form, arsenic-3, tends to concentrate in certain tissues, liver, gills, and heart. In many parts of the state, residents consume the entire fish. DEC proposed criteria would not provide protection for these fish consumers. In terms of mixing zones, we do not agree with the proposed amendments because it is limited only to human health effects and does not explicitly prohibit acute toxicity to aquatic organisms within the mixing zone. The proposed language ignores potential instances in which pollutants are bioaccumulated by individual organisms, but not bioaccumulated in the food chain. Mussels are one such organism. We believe the proposed language is too narrow in scope. The image of the clean water means pure quality seafood products, exactly what the state markets through the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. Amending state water quality standards to allow the discharge of carcinogens and mutagens into fish and shellfish producing waters will have detrimental effects on public opinion and Alaska seafood marketing campaigns. Both existing and proposed mixing zone regulations fail to specifically protect resident fish and shellfish populations. We believe it is important for ADS&G to exercise its authority to protect important commercial sport and subsistence fish stocks. It is for these reasons that we believe mixing zones should not be authorized in anadromous and resident game fish waters and other waters with resident fish species of local, cultural, or social significance without the express concurrence of ADS&G. We firmly believe there must be protection for upstream as well as downstream uses. Reproductive and genetic impairment may result in fish swimming through a mixing zone that is downstream of the fish spawning area, thereby impairing stream use. We strongly believe that no mixing zone should be allowed in fish spawning areas, no exceptions. And lastly, with regard to classification of groundwaters, we believe groundwater should be included under the aquatic life standard. Upwelling groundwaters are extremely important spawning habitat for salmon. This is particularly true for fall run chum salmon that we have here in the southeast. We believe such waters should be given protection. Clearly, DEC has failed to adequately address the public's concerns that have been raised and have failed to significantly and scientifically defend these proposed revisions. We believe the proposed revisions must be rejected. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to have to change the format here a bit because we are running out of time. I would like to get back to the panels. So what I will do is I'll take one person from each of our sites, then we'll take the panel and the legislative questions, and then we'll come back to public testimony. So I apologize to Petersburg. We will come back at a later point. Next, I'd like to go to Ketchikan. Roland Stanton, are you there?
He has left. He's going to provide written testimony.
Is Katie French there?
Hi, this is Katie French. I would like to make comment on several issues and then specify some specifically. I appreciate the opportunity to comment on the serious impact the state's water quality standards will have on the citizens. I believe there's a need to reevaluate the regulations to assure the protection of the environment. Specifically, the classification of water bodies. Because the state has failed to classify so many water bodies, most of us are restricted to the most stringent designated use. There's over 3 million lakes and thousands of miles of coastline, and I think that's prohibitive to industry, to citizens, and to municipalities. And if the state is not going to classify any more water bodies, which they intend, then I don't understand why this training and review focuses on specific designated uses. Under the natural characteristics of water, in the public testimony earlier in September, they've sort of commented on some Mother Nature calls. I don't think it adequately covers what it's intended to cover, and I think the water quality division needs to go back and better define that. Under CEQA call form, once again, the state has made changes on a few use categories, but other use categories are more stringent, so that defaults to everyone that's in an unclassified or undesignated water body to still have to meet the most stringent standards. So for most of us out here, we're still stuck with 20 CEQA call form for 100 mil, and I think that's inappropriate at best. The color standard, once again, the Mother Nature clause does not take care of it. Needs to be reevaluated. And 15 color unit is, you know, it's not even noticeable with the human eye. And I think it's just inappropriate for the state of Alaska because there is so much natural watercolor. Specifically, I did want to address the human health criteria and some toxic substances. Under human health criteria, EPA specifies human health criteria for three risk levels at 10 to the minus 5 through 10 to the minus 7. The default risk level for all the toxic priority pollutants for which EPA has published water quality criteria has been 10 to the negative 6. As one of the original 22 states that failed to adopt a risk level for carcinogens, Alaska will be subject to the National Toxics Rule. NPR is considered highly controversial. The Office of Management and Budget has continually questioned EPA's cancer risk level and believes this criteria should be established by the state. In ADC regulatory issue paper, Human Health Criteria for Dioxin, the state of Alaska emphasizes the reluctance to adopt criteria under the 10 to minus 6 blanket set by the NTR for several reasons. First, the risk level of 1 in 1 million is considered unnecessarily conservative. Secondly, only a small subset of the population is exposed to the risk as defined by the rate of water and fish consumption in both volume and lifetime behavior. Third, pollutants vary greatly in their mobility, bioaccumulation, and toxicity. And fourth, the prevailing model used to assess cancer potency is now widely believed to be inappropriate for some pollutants, as discussed by the Center for